Welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox. This is Adam Frommel here with only Andy Bailey. Dan is not with us today, but he will be back for future episodes. We are going to be talking about the Sacramento Kings today and doing our best to try and figure out what in the world happened to them this offseason. It was a summer filled with equal parts dysfunction and credible roster building. They have an entirely new rotation now. Rondo is in town, Marco Bellinelli, Seth Curry, James Anderson, Omri Caspi, Kosta Kufa, Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, the list just goes on, but we still don't know how these pieces are going to fit together, and it's a really combustible set of personalities in place here, especially coached by George Karl. So, Andy, are you buying or selling this offseason, or both?
I'm glad you gave me the third option, because I think that's what I'm going to take. As you were naming all those players, and I've thought about this a couple times this summer, I wouldn't have minded their offseason that much if not for the Rondo signing. I think a lot of the other players they added are pretty solid. I like the Marco Bellinelli pickup quite a bit. I don't mind a flyer on Seth Curry. I'm not saying he'll be a huge impact guy for him this season, but I don't mind that. I don't mind Kosta Kufis. I kind of like the Willie Cauley-Stein draft pick. But Rondo just has never made even a little bit of sense to me. And I think he is one of the few players in the NBA that can single-handedly crater whatever else you're trying to build. That's what he did with the Mavericks last season. It was plain as day. And he hasn't been very good for two or three years. I don't understand rolling the dice on him, even if it is a one-year deal.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other issue in play here is just perception. Because originally, this team sent off Nick Stauskas, along with Carl Landry, to the Philadelphia 76ers and sent picks with that as well. It was an inexplicable trade at the time.
Yeah, that was odd.
But the point was to create cap space so that they could go after these big free agent targets. And then that doesn't work, and instead you're left with Rondo and Bellinelli as the highlights. And that to me, even if they did improve their roster, it wasn't what they originally planned to do, and they made that plan so blindingly obvious by making that trade with Philly that when they had to backtrack, it just looked bad.
Yeah, that might have been the low light of the offseason for them, and whatever they tried to do to explain it, just it didn't make any sense. It was just a gift to the Sixers to sign this guy that I will be shocked if Rajon Rondo ends up having a positive impact on this team in any way. I anticipate a major adverse impact from him. They can try to sell it all they want, you know, from Vlade and the rest of the front office, and until I see it, I'm just not going to believe any of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's tough to really wrap your head around what Rondo has become, because he's only 29 years old. He's going to turn 30 in February. And he isn't that far removed from those all-star caliber seasons. I mean, we had the ACL tear, and he hasn't been able to recover since then. But he also hasn't really been on a team that he fit with. You know, those Boston teams, the pieces around him were declining, and then they went away to different locations. And then in Dallas, he was never a good fit from the start. I know you remember that I was really down on that trade even before it happened. And their offense collapsed once he was there, which was probably equal parts his negative impact and then a natural regression to the mean because they were playing at such a ridiculous historic pace. But if you put him in the situation with the right pieces around him, I think he can still be a productive player and be motivated on the defensive end, which hasn't been the case in a while. I'm just still not sure that those pieces are the ones that Sacramento has.
I'm not sure either, and I think injuries do have something to do with it. I also think that his game is just archaic. He hit his peak right around the time that sort of old-school traditional point guards were on their way out. So he was kind of the last breath of that era of point guard, the guy who dominates the ball, runs pick and rolls, controls every aspect of the offense, pretty much every assist is his. Now, guards in general, point guards, shooting guards, wings, everybody has to be able to dribble a little bit. Everybody has to pass. Everybody has to shoot. And it keeps defenses more honest because the ball is moving to several legitimate offensive threats. guys that can score and create for others. Now, all he can do is create. He can't score. And it's a product of his inability to shoot. And it makes him somebody that the defense doesn't really have to worry about. Suddenly, his playmaking skills aren't as valuable because teams can just anticipate that. They can play off his drives and play for the pass. And the way that he dominates the ball, it just makes offenses very predictable.
Yeah, and beyond that, he doesn't fit in with this lineup in terms of spacing, which has become such a key concept in today's NBA. And whether the front court is going to be DeMarcus Cousins and Costa Kufis, or Willie Cauley-Stein and DeMarcus Cousins, they're not going to have enough shooters on the court to pair with Rondo, because you're looking at a guy in Cousins who excels from that high block, and you want to get him the ball there with space as much as possible, but you're pairing him with another big man who's not going to stretch out a defense. Rudy Gay is best with his back to the basket, operating out of the post. He admitted as much last season. He knows that he's not really a spacing wing. And then Ben McLemore has struggled, so if you're going to play Marco Bellinelli over him, that's fine. But you're looking at one guy who can stretch out the defense in that five-man lineup, and that's not really the key to success, especially for a player who, when he has the ball in his hands, which he needs to have in order to thrive, and that's obviously Rondo, defenses are going to back off him and just clog everything up even more. So I don't see how this is really a fit at all.
Yeah, I think the only way that you can make a guard like that still work in today's game is if you do have three or even four shooters on the floor with him. Somebody like Rubio or Rondo. We were just talking about somebody else that's... who's the guy that has the Rondo comparisons we were just talking about? It might have been Rubio. Elfrid Payton, that's who it was. Those kind of guys, I think, can be successful if they're in the right roster, just like you've said.
Sure.
And I think Sacramento does have some pieces that could be those kind of players. I just don't know if Carl's going to be willing to play all of them. Like, my favorite lineup for them would probably be something that had Rudy Gay at the four to take advantage of some of that stuff you were just talking about, how he likes to play with his back to the basket. Then you have Cousins at the five. Maybe you have Bellinelli and McLemore on the wings, and then Collison at the point. You can put Rondo there just because there is more shooting, but no matter what lineup we throw out, and we haven't mentioned this yet, I'm going to put Collison in there over Rondo.
Sure, absolutely. If it's me,
because he's just a better player.
If you think about it, the actual on-court product is a nice representation of what's going on with the Sacramento front office, too. It's a bunch of pieces that maybe are individually talented, but just don't mesh well together, or at least haven't yet. I mean, we have way too many competing voices here. Vivek Ranadive, who isn't a basketball person, is trying to make basketball decisions. And to his credit, he has done a fantastic job kind of revitalizing the culture in Sacramento with all these technical revolutions. And it's when he starts trying to mess with the on-court product that things go awry. Vlade Divac, you know, more good ideas, doesn't really understand the CBA, is being promoted a little bit too quickly. And then you have George Karl, who has always run an entirely different kind of team and has typically been that kind of authoritative voice within the organization. And he's not allowed to be that and is immediately set up in a clash with DeMarcus Cousins, in a potential clash with Rajon Rondo. And he has all of these strong locker room personalities that aren't necessarily the best ideas for him to have on his squad. So in a way, this Kings roster is kind of perfect because it represents exactly what has happened to construct it.
Yeah, it's all those ingredients you just mentioned. And I'm just thinking this is like a powder keg waiting to blow. I think there's maybe some scenarios where everything plays out fine and they're better than expected. But I think there's a lot more scenarios where Rondo gets ticked off or Cousins get ticked off or both or Carl. There's so many things that could possibly clash that regardless of the talent that they added outside of Rondo this offseason, it's just hard to see everything meshing.
You ready for the first 10 games on their schedule?
Yeah, I am.
Clippers, Lakers, Clippers, Grizzlies, Suns, Rockets, Warriors, Spurs, Pistons, and Nets. That is not an easy schedule.
Yeah, that's tough. I was going to say the only gimme really is the, and maybe not even the Lakers, but that's
maybe
the one
Nets.
I'd be confident about.
Maybe the Nets as well. But the reason I bring that up is because this team needs to get off to a strong start. If they're down in the dumps from the beginning with all these new pieces in place, with Rondo trying to revitalize his career, with Cousins trying to prove that he can be an MVP caliber player and take a team to the playoffs, and he said that those are their expectations this season, for better or for worse, that is not the kind of schedule that you want to start off with, especially while working with the front office. We saw what happened last year with Mike Malone. You know, as soon as Cousins goes down with the illness, Malone's fired. Everything gets thrown into turmoil because there's no patience here. So what happens when they start off 2-8? What happens if they start out 1-9?
That's scary. I think it's just what a 2-8 or a 1-9 start just makes what we were saying all that much more likely, that one or more of those personalities explodes and then it just spirals out of control from there. It's really hard for a professional team to get into that sort of a trajectory and turn it around mid-season. A lot of times it takes a big shakeup in the off-season or a good training camp to really change course. They might even overreact again and fire George Karl. Like, it's that crazy. All those ingredients makes that crazy of a possibility.
Mm-hmm. What would you do to turn this around? I mean, are you looking to make a big mid-season trade or early season splash, or are you just going to play it out and see what happens?
Well, assuming I'm stuck with Rondo, right?
I guess, yeah. I mean,
like, obviously, the world is your oyster. I never would have made the Rondo deal in the first place. But if I was given this roster right off the bat, I guess I would see how things play off play out in that opening stretch of the season. The only big trade they can make is DeMarcus Cousins, right?
Yeah, but they shouldn't do that. I mean, he's a legitimate centerpiece. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they should trade him. So I think if things go wrong, you just have to ride it out for the year and wait for Rondo's contract to come off the books. I mean, I don't really see any other moves to be made. I guess Rudy Gay might have some value to some GMs, but I don't really hate his fit there either. This is going to sound kind of like obvious or simplistic, but it just always comes back to Rondo for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one piece that just throws everything out of whack in my mind.
The other concern here is that they don't really have the ability to build through the draft either. I mean, they owe their 2006 first rounder Chicago, unless it's 1-10. And even if they don't convey it, they're going to have to, they have the ability to swap it with the Philadelphia 76ers, which might not actually change that much. And then 2017, if they haven't conveyed it already, it's protected again. Philly can swap again, and they might actually be better then. And if it's not conveyed, then it goes in 2018. So at some point, they're going to have to be handing over a key piece as well.
Are those the picks they included in the Stauskas trade?
Yeah.
They gave...
The right to swap. They'd already traded one to Chicago.
First round picks?
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't make any sense. And some seconds.
That's so crazy. I forgot first round picks were involved in that.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the weirdest moves I've seen in a long time.
That the Sixers wouldn't have taken the same salary dump without first rounders? I guess they must have asked.
I think Hinkie wants picks no matter what, so we can speculate about that one all day.
Man, I would love to have had a wiretap on that phone call between Divac and Hinkie.
I do think you're right, though, that it all does boil down to Rondo, which is not the sentence you want to hear heading into the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad in the sense that it's like really scary for this season. But I guess if you're a Kings fan, you can lean on the fact that it's just one season, and if it goes horribly wrong, you just try again next year. But the problem with that is, how many times have they had to do that since DeMarcus Cousins has come into the league?
Yeah, at some point it's like you have to surround him with talent.
Yeah,
I will say, though, I'll play optimist here, that they do have pieces in place where they could make more noise than we expect. Because if Rondo is motivated to play basketball like he did before that ACL injury and really becomes a committed defender, they have a lot of intriguing pieces on that end. You know, Rudy Gay and Ben McLemore can both be decent wing defenders. Cousins is an underrated defender in the paint. And Kufus is actually a good rim-protecting big who can hold down the paint. So I can see this team exceeding expectations if he is the player who still resonates in households, even though his production hasn't necessarily matched it in recent years.
I would agree with you there. And I think one of our other season previews, I mentioned the Kings as a team that might have the biggest range of like best case scenario to worst case scenario in the Western Conference, because I think there is a lot of raw talent there. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're around 500. I also wouldn't be surprised if they're around 20, 25 wins.
I would be surprised like, by 500. that would
you would be surprised
me.
By 500?
Oh, yeah. That's
I think,
a substantial
I think Cousins
jump.
Is a, what did they finish with last year?
They won 29 games last year.
Okay, so it'd be like an 11, 12 game jump.
Yeah, but
which is big.
In the West,
but I think Cousins
with a lot of new
is,
pieces and no continuity, that worries me.
Yeah. Here's the only thing that I would say in defense of that seemingly crazy claim, or a couple things I would say. I think Cousins is probably the most talented center in the NBA if we're calling Anthony Davis a power forward. And I think George Karl, as much as maybe his reputation has suffered since going to the Kings, has a track record of being a really good coach. He took sort of a hodgepodge roster with the Nuggets after the Melo trade and won 57 games. I think he is a great offensive mind, and he knows how to maximize talent, at least on the offensive end. And they have talent offensive players. At the same time, though, I would not be surprised if nothing meshes and they're right back where they were last season.
Yeah, I'm on board with all of that. I think I said this on the Pelicans podcast for their season preview, but I think that if MVP actually means most valuable player and not best player on the best team, DeMarcus Cousins is a legitimate candidate. Using that Fats metric I have, the Kings last year were a 40.3 win team with him on the floor, 22.8 without him. That is a huge, huge, huge swing. And
yeah. He's
only getting better. I don't think that so much of the conversation with Cousins revolves around what's happening in his head, whether he's mature enough, whether he's staying disciplined enough on the court, whether he's getting into fights with his coaches, whether he's getting ejected. And it's a shame because he's such a remarkable and unique talent. I mean, this is a guy who I don't know that you can find a big man with the same combination of physicality and finesse that he has since maybe like prime Shaquille O'Neal. And that's a really lofty comparison, but I'm willing to stand by that one.
Yeah, I don't think it's a crazy thing to say. I would even say that there are a couple things he can do that Shaq couldn't do.
Like
there's
passing.
Been an interesting little development in his game in the last couple of years. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. All of a sudden, he's not only a good passer, he can create off the dribble. From
that's
the
my
perimeter,
other issue with bringing Rondo into the picture, is just that you're taking the ball out of his hands. And we saw what he did at the very end of the last season, where he was averaging, like, what, a triple-double for, like, a three-game stretch. It was, like, something crazy, like 30, 15, and 10 or something.
Mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. And I want to see him do that. I want to see him get the ball in the high block and attack.
Same here. And I think that's another reason that Collison makes more sense, because he is a much better option off the ball than Rajon Rondo is. So if there are those possessions where Cousins has the ball in his hands, you know, he's got another option to kick to for three in Collison. If you kick to Rondo for three, you know, who knows what's going to happen. He shot better in Dallas than he did in Boston, but his career track record as a shooter is pretty poor.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So you've been kind of dancing around it by saying that there's such a big wide range. You could see him finishing with 20. You could see him 500. We need a firm number here.
I'm going to split the difference.
The safe play.
Yeah. Man, it seems crazy. I was going to say 30, but I feel like they'll improve by more than one win just because of Cousins and Karl. I'm going to say 34.
I was going to say 35, so it sounds like we're pretty much on the same page. I mean, again, if everything breaks right, maybe they can touch 500. I don't know that they're a playoff team, even if that does happen. But
me either.
The West is just too strong. I mean, if they're in the East, absolutely. But it seems like their ceiling to me is probably, I mean, I think we've established throughout these episodes that I feel like there's a pretty clear cut 1 through 8. And I think their ceiling is supplanting the Suns and the Mavericks as the 9 seed.
Yeah, I actually feel the same way. And the more previews we've done, I when we first started this series of previews, I thought that back end, like 7 through 10, was kind of open, but it does seem to be clearing up in my mind too.
Yep. So, with those predictions, Kings fans are probably a bit upset, which means that it's time to move into...
Bacon! Bacon! Where's the bacon? I smell bacon! 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 Gotta be bacon! Only one thing smells like bacon! That's bacon!
Yes, folks. It is time for the Burning Bacon segment of the Hardwood Knox podcast. And this episode, the bacon that is burning is on the frying pan of Adam Frommel.
I don't understand who the New Orleans Pelicans pissed off. It's ridiculous. Andy thinks that by not giving Jim or Fredette enough minutes that they cursed themselves and now they're doomed to suffer one injury after another. He might be right at this point. Most recent news is Tyreke Evans underwent a arthroscopic surgery on his right knee. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, probably closer to the 6 weeks. Then he's going to have to work himself back into shape. Beyond that, Drew Holiday, probably on a limit of 15 minutes per game until January. He might not play back-to-backs even beyond that. What does this core have to do to actually realize its potential? I feel so bad for Anthony Davis and for everyone that put this team together, because when they put together that team of Holiday, of Evans, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and Anthony Davis, they had such high expectations, and we still have no idea what this team can do together. They barely played over 100 minutes at the same time during the 2014-15 season, and now it seems like they might not even meet that total this year unless every recovery goes perfectly and no one else gets hurt, which seems remarkably unlikely. This could be such a fun team. Davis alone makes it a fun team, and they could be the league pass favorite. They could be a team that rises way higher than we expect in the Western Conference. And now they're going to have to fight for that last playoff spot again because of all these injuries that just keep piling up.
Well, first off, I don't think that the Jimmer curse is the reason. I know it's the reason.
I think that's totally valid.
And I'm with you. When they first put that team together, Ryan Anderson came in the same offseason too, right?
Yep.
I remember thinking Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Ryan Anderson, and Anthony Davis would be one of the funnest five-man units to watch in the league. And they've barely seen – you just said those four guys had seen just about 100 minutes, right?
That five-man lineup had like 140 last year.
Yeah. Gosh. It's tough. And Eric Gordon's been pretty injury-prone, so, you know, who knows if he'll last too.
Even Davis is. I mean, that's the one knock on him. Gosh.
Sad times. Mm-hmm. If you want to lament the cruel fate of the Pelicans with us on Twitter, you can do that with me at Andrew D. Bailey. Adam is at Frommel09, F-R-O-M-O-L, F-R-O-M-A-L 09. Got talking too
close
fast
enough.
There. Dan
really
is
just
at Dan.
Tweet it whoever you want, you know.
Exactly. Dan is at Dan Favalli. I think I've been mispronouncing his name for most of this podcast. But his is F-A-V-A-L-E, and then all three of us are at Hardwood Knox. If you listen to the podcast on iTunes, make sure and give us a rating there. I think that's how iTunes – I don't think. I know that's how iTunes places podcasts on their service. And if you listen on Stitcher, favorite us. And thanks so much, and shout out to Bino Udry.